the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
How are you doing today, Nurse Teresa?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Girl, I can't complain about a thing. I'm counting each day joy. You know, people think when the clock strikes 12 that it is going to just be poof, abracadabra. Everything is going to be back to normal. No. And I'm the internal optimist. I really, really am. But, you know, right now, I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling it. And I know that you work very hard with coaching nurses, with the advanced nursing coaching that you're doing with Lynn to really teach them resilience. And I'm hoping in this conversation today that you can share that with me and my brains here on the Edge. You see that, brains? You got a new postcard.
I see it. I have mine. Here's mine.
Look at her. She's on the Edge with me. Put that down so I can see your face too. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. This is the spot. Brains, this is your home, okay? This is a place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Today, we have another fantastic guest that is selfless, that is worthy, that is loving, that is kind and compassionate. I can't give her enough accolades for being a nurse. She is a post anesthesia recovery nurse. Did I get that right?
You did. Very good.
Bravo.
Yay.
You know what, Brain? She brings you up after you've been under. She makes sure that you recover, that your pain is under control. And she's done this for, 20 years now?
20 years, yeah.
20 years, putting herself at risk. You know, I think the doctors, well, not even doctors. I'm sorry, you doctors, but I think that the nurses and teachers are really angels here on earth. And she's going to tell us a little bit about resilience and what it takes and what she's been through and what she's going through. So help us welcome her to the Edge right there. That is Nurse Teresa Walding. Hello, baby. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
I'm glad to be here. Yeah, this is wonderful. I like to come and join conversations and see what's around and what's out there.
Well, everything is out there swirling and whirling and it's crazy and we can't get our head around it because we're afraid, you know?
Yeah.
You know about fear. We were just talking in the green room about, you know, transitioning and seeing things and hearing things. And a lot of people don't get an opportunity to walk that journey of transitioning. Yeah. They're just poof, they're just gone.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your walk with life and why you became a nurse.
So when I was 7, I fell down on the way home from school and we had block moms back then. And so she comes running out with her daughter and she picks me up and brushes me off and takes me in the house and cleans up my knee. And after, when she was getting ready to put the Band-Aid on, she asked if her daughter could put it on. And I said, yeah, that's fine. She goes, she wants to be a nurse. And I was like, I want to be a nurse because it felt wonderful to have someone take care of me. You know, and so that planted the seed for me. And then when I was 18, I was in the hospital for a tumor removal on my ovary. And there was a nurse there. I still don't know what she looked like. I could hear her voice. But, you know, I was going through a little bit of a rough time. It was painful and this kind of thing. And she said, you know, I can tell you're having a hard time. So as soon as I make my rounds, I'm going to come and just sit with you and we can talk or not, it's up to you. So a little while later, she came and sat next to me and I remember looking up and I saw on her badge, it said her name, which I still don't know, but it said RNBSN. And I was like, I wanna be that because I liked the way she made me feel. And it brought back that desire to be a nurse from when I was a little girl. You know, and I've taken care of people my whole life. It's just a natural thing for me. And 10 years later, I was a nurse.
Wow.
It just came around and it was, I had one person that asked me a very pointed question. I was working at the Idaho State Tax Commission right out of high school. And one of the girls had just graduated, and she said, "So what do you want to be when you grow up?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to be a nurse." And she said, "So when are you going to start that?" And I went, "Oh, when am I going to start that?" And I signed up for school that day. When I got off work, I went down and signed up. And that was the beginning. And I was like,
"You haven't stopped since." And no. It's about how you make me feel. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the comfort. And comforting people is magnified right now because people that are in the hospital with COVID, or if they don't have COVID, if they have, you know, heart attack or cancer treatment, whatever, they're not able to be with their loved ones because they're trying to really minimize the people that are exposed to different things. And so now you are extended family. And there's so much that you have to put up with, you know, anger, hostility. One of my nurse friends told me that her patient bit her. I'm like, oh my God. But they're going through a lot and you still hang in there. And there's another thing that's going on. There's bullying between nurses. What is that all about? How do they have time to do that in between taking care of these patients?
I don't know.
It's work. You know, to bully somebody, it's work.
Well, you know, I think it's, I don't know why it's there. You know, I think it comes with the stress of the job or expectations of other people. And sometimes people can't overlook others' differences. And so, I don't know, in my view, bullying doesn't look like beating someone down. It looks like the eye roll or the say something behind their back or, you know, the little things that just don't really serve anyone.
Right. The little snarkiness. But little, you know, snarkiness. What? I'm not going to just put that on nurses because that's everywhere.
It is.
And it's pettiness. And I'm going to tell you something, you know, brains, I got to call us out. A lot of it's done by women. And it's so unnecessary because it's jealousy, it's insecurity, it's fear. Oh my gosh, she's going to get, you know, promoted, or oh my gosh, she got off early, or she's this or she's that, or she thinks she's that. You know, that cracks me up when people tell me what I think I am. Yeah.
And you know what's funny about that is exactly what we teach in our nurse coaching program. Where our experience is coming from is from us. It's not about the other person. It's about you. It's how you're showing up. And I have to say, we have probably all, including you and me, been guilty of the eye roll.
Girl, please.
Whatever.
I have butchered people with this tongue. Okay. Right. I have done it. You would have thought they was a filet mignon when I got finished with them.
Oh. Right. And that, but that's still not being respectful.
No, it's not.
It's just showing others what you're thinking.
Right.
And you may not have all the answers or all of the right way of thinking about it. You're just feeling your thinking.
Well, you're caught up in your feelings. But again, mm-hmm. it is because, you know, it's a way of trying to make yourself feel superior and the other person inferior. But what's resonating in the atmosphere is ugliness. Ugliness is an energy. And yes. Other people are watching that and they're saying, oh my God, if she did that to her, she could do this to me. Yeah. And then you look in that thing called a mirror, and that's self-reflection. And you know, I'll give you a perfect example. My mother, we were talking about jealousy. Me and my mother were talking and she was jealous of this little girl. And, you know, she had pretty ringlets and she was so gorgeous and everything. And so one of the other girls cut off one of her ringlets.
Oh my.
And, you know, my mother and them would just snark and be nasty to her. The little girl died of tuberculosis.
Oh, wow.
And my mother said from that day forward, she was never envious or jealous of anyone. But jealousy is a real emotion. It is a real emotion. And so you have to identify it. It's toxic, but you have to work through it. So in a situation like this, and people are combative, but you are responsible for the lives of others, what do you tell your trainees in this advanced nursing coaching program that you have, how to get beyond that and how to show up authentically?
So we talk about where do you think your feelings are coming from? So when you identify that your feelings are coming from you and not the circumstance, you can gain a different perspective about life, about the other person. The other thing we talk a lot about is separate realities. We know that, you know, if I say separate realities to people, they're like, well, yeah, no one thinks like me. But there's a deeper meaning to that. Separate realities means no one has ever thought like you.
Whoa.
And no one can ever know what someone else is thinking. Mm. So if there's what I'm trying to think of a good example, if there's something going on a unit that appears to be about other people, that's time to take a step back and say, oh, hold on, what's really going on here? Mm. People are feeling their thinking. There may be a stressor that they're not talking about or you don't know about, and they're doing something about that that maybe the other people don't understand. A really good example comes up when I call it the bed wars. So I'm working on call one night and I go upstairs and I want a specific bed for a patient because certain floors require a scale on the bed. So I wanted that particular bed for this patient because I thought they were going to go to the ICU. And the CNA on the floor goes, well, I know exactly where that bed is. And she was working on a different floor that day. So we go up to the floor to get that bed and instantly the nurses are mad. They're like, why are you taking our bed? That's our bed. You can't have that bed. I'm like, it's for a patient. And the CNA is like, what is happening here? And so we were trying to explain it. It could not be heard. The reason for doing it could not be heard. And so the CNA was a little bit perturbed and said so. And right then I took a step back and I went, what is really going on here? Mm. And what I saw was everyone thinking their own thoughts about this. Some people took we have little computers that we roll around with us. Mm-hmm. And they took hers and went around the corner and just removed herself from the situation. But then in my nurse mind, I went, you know, if I was working on this floor and I had a potential of getting another patient, I would want that bed. So she's planning ahead and we're thinking in the moment, I have this patient that might be coming to you, but it wasn't set in stone. And so there was that little push and pull. Everyone was wanting what they wanted because they had their plan in place.
Right.
And I thought, and in that moment, I said, you know what? This isn't that important. Mm-hmm. And we took the bed we had, which did not meet the requirement. But a patient can be moved from one bed to another, no problem.
Right.
And so I just happened to be learning about the principles. And that when that happened, I saw how incivility and bullying happen. It's not because it's a direct, I don't like you. It's you're doing what to me now? Or this is happening. Oh, no, that's not happening. You see how that works?
I see how it works. But again, it takes time to think about it.
Well, if you don't know that's what's happening, yeah, you don't know.
Because, again, it's a learning. It's a learned behavior, just like ugliness mm-hmm. and insecurity and all of those are learned behaviors. So, yes. Again, this is a retooling of your brain. Let's talk a little bit about resilience. You teach your nurses a lot about resilience and how to not take it personally and actually live in the moment. Share that with us.
So we talk about where does your experience actually come from? And it's your thought, your feeling in the moment. Now that sounds really simple. Everybody knows that. We're like, that makes perfect sense. We've heard that before. But we take it one step further into no, really. In this moment, your thought, your feeling is your life experience. Mm-hmm. And when you catch a glimpse of yourself creating your life from that space, the way you show up changes. Mm. So we know that we have circumstances. We know we have other people that interact with us. But none of that matters in your life experience or your lived experience. What only what comes to you as your experience is what you think about it. Now, there's a little bit bigger picture here because we have access to all mind, all thought, and all consciousness, right? Those are things, elements of mental life. And what that does for us is gives us the full experience of life, not just the personalized experience. So when you have a realization or an insight that you are the creator of your experience, but you're using mind, thought, and consciousness to get there, you have the ability to have new thought, new answers to your problems, things you hadn't thought of before, because you slow down to the present moment where it's happening. And it's independent of what we call the outside in, which is the things that can appear to make us think or feel something, such as a circumstance or what someone else says to us. It gives you.
I'm gonna have to, again, like the filet mignon, I'm gonna have to marinate on that because, again, it is a consciousness, but it's a deep level consciousness. So I'm gonna have to replay that, take me some notes and watch it because, again, what you're saying is very mindful. Brains, there's no problem. That's why I record this so that we can rewind this because that's deep. I mean, that's very deep. It's very deep. And it takes work. This is not a one session conversation.
Right.
It's really a process because you got to take each piece, dissect it, and then move it to the next to come up with the recipe for success. How did you get this? How did you get so smart? Who poured it to you?
I suffered for a really long time. So I've been a holistic nurse for over 20 years. And, you know, initially it was just for self-care and I liked the way it made me feel and I enjoyed it. But then about seven years ago, I started having a lot of chronic pain. And things in my life weren't going as I would have liked them to. Work was very stressful. I was very busy. I was taking a lot of call. I had a daughter who was into alcohol. She was an alcoholic for a period of time. And I was really, really scared for her. And I had a daughter who was in a marriage that wasn't optimal. And I had a husband who had been retired for a little while, but was kind of starting to have symptoms of PTSD, little anger outbursts, little weird mood stuff. And I didn't know what to do with it. I was like, I have no idea what all of this is about. All I know is if I worry enough, maybe something bad won't happen. Maybe my daughter won't die. Maybe, you know, my daughter's marriage will be okay. And maybe my husband will straighten out. I don't know. Right. But I was holding all of that within me, trying to juggle all the balls and keep them all floating at the same time. And to be honest, I wasn't doing a very good job. So about that time, Stephanie came home and finished rehab. So I was starting to catch a little breath of air, right? And she had been doing just fine. She was working and all of that. And my husband was talking to some friends who, you know, helped him out, and he started seeing a little bit different. And I went to a conference with Dr. Keith Blevins, and he started telling me about how thought works, about how mental life actually works. And the morning of that conference, we had a nighttime session where he described what it is and what it isn't. And then he started talking about what I just talked about, the separate realities part, that no one can have someone else's experience ever. And you can't help them from that place. And I heard it in my whole body.
I'm hearing it now. Brains, you know, life is a smorgasbord, but everything is not going to be on your plate.
No.
You know, what Teresa eats, April may not like.
That's right.
I get you. That was heavy.
Yeah. Well, and the pain, as soon as I heard it, the pain in my body disappeared. And I went, so I'm looking around the room because, of course, I'm the only one that can see this, right? Wow. I'm the only, and I
felt light. That's right. You're having an experience.
It was a personal, powerful experience of, for the very first time, seeing me creating my life in the moment and what it looked like. And I understood in that moment that I was really caught up in the illusion that I had something to do or could control my family to help them. Not intentions of control, like make them do something, but to keep something bad from happening.
Right, right.
Right. And
you were their life's Uber driver.
I was. And I took it very seriously.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You wanted to put on their seatbelt and you wanted to drive them to safety.
Yeah.
I understand that they had their own driver's license and they have their own cars.
I know. And my daughter told me that. My daughter was like, this isn't your problem. And I was like, it sure looks like mine, you know, and she was right. And she has been such a wonderful, I mean, just example of knowing where her experience is coming from. She has always known. She said, I thought everybody knew this. I said, well, it would have been nice if you'd shared it.
Right, you know? Right.
She didn't know that other people didn't know. And she doesn't blame anyone for how she got into the alcohol trap. She actually tried to get out herself, but was having some withdrawal problems, and it scared her. So she said, well, I'm not doing that.
Right. So it's better just to deal with it. Okay, so now you've got somebody again in the driver's seat.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to control everything, you know, and you can't. So what do you do? How do you shift gears? How do you go into a different, I'm loving this car analogy.
It works good.
Yeah. But I mean, really, how do you downshift? How do you extract yourself and still feel okay? Because even with the mindset, in your internal gut, you're wondering, okay, you know, am I going to get that phone call? Am I going to have something going to happen in ER? Am I going to make a mistake with the medication that I'm administering at work because I'm distracted? How do you shift and drive the car in your lane at that point? That's a lot of work.
A really interesting thing happens when you experience that coming home feeling of knowing that you are the thinker of your thoughts. It's like life slows down a little bit. I often make the analogy that it feels like I'm in the eye of the hurricane, where everything is chaos around me, but in my space is complete calm. And when that happens, your thinking slows down. You become present to what you're doing. You pay attention to the details. And believe it or not, when that happens, you can get more done, because you're not moving ahead of what you can actually do. You know, if you slow down to the speed of life, which can appear to move very fast, our thinking goes really fast. But the reality is you can only do one thing at a time. You can do them quickly, but there's microseconds in between each thing. So I experience that pretty regularly now, especially with critical patients, where I'm like, okay, so this is where we are and this is what's happening. What is the most important thing to do next? Not everything I have to do, just the next thing. As soon as that's done, the next thing. As soon as that's done, the next thing. I had a patient for 6 hours one time where I did exactly that. I look back and I was floored at how much I had gotten done in a short period of time. Wow,
I love it. Because my husband, Mr. Magnificent, is quick to say, baby, that multitasking, he said, that's an oxymoron. You need to focus on one thing at a time. Mm-hmm. And once you've mastered that, you take that and you build on it to the next thing and the next thing. And it is amazing. But yeah. Life and careers and outside influences have programmed us to think that, oh, you can do everything. You know, you're the superwoman. You can cook, you can clean, you can teach, you can work, you can be a good lover, yada, 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 yada. And you're all twisted. instead of focusing on cooking a good dinner and then bathing the children and then reading them a book. I mean, you know, it is a process, much like life. You don't go from 2 years old to 12 years old. There's a process and there's things that you have to learn in between. So brains, take that into consideration. Quit trying to do so much and slow down and live in the present, because the present is the gift. Oh, this is, I'm loving it. I'm loving it, you know? Yeah. So when you leave nursing that way, you need to go into, you know, psychology and all that, because you explain it with such a delicate, it's like being touched with a feather. I feel it. Mm-hmm. Your voice inflection, your, you know, your energy, plus you have, you know, you have walked the walk and you have done that. But outside of that, I heard you can cook some mean gumbo.
I sure can. You're absolutely right. So my mother-in-law, my husband's stepmom is French Cajun. And so we went for Thanksgiving one year and she said, I'm going to cook us some gumbo. Well, gumbo took a long time because she boiled the chicken and, you know, made the potato salad. And looking back, I think I was just really hungry. I don't think it really took that long. But she showed me how to make the roux. I had never heard of it before.
Now, that I got to stop you right there, because I'm getting ready to make some gumbo. Okay. Mm-hmm. I got everything that I need. Tell us the secret to making a good roux, because people do it different. I have one family member that puts, you know, does the butter and the flour and all that, and then she pours it into it. Then I have other people that make the base with the roux. Give me your recipe.
The way she taught me how to do it is you put the fat, whatever oil you're going to use, in the bottom and heat it up. And then you sprinkle you don't pour the flour in before it's hot enough to brown the flour. Oh, that was the one thing. I did not know that.
Brown enough. That's what it is. I'm going to burn it.
Right. Well, if you put it in at the right temperature when it's just sizzling, then you kind of sprinkle it in and then you never stop stirring it until it gets to be the brown that you like. Not everyone likes the same brownness.
Well, you know, I live that girl. You know, everybody like a different brownness.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some people like that more burnt taste. I don't care for it as much. I like it just short of that. Yes. Right. And then you pour the cold liquid in as soon as it's there, so it doesn't keep cooking. Okay. And so that's what she taught me to do.
Okay.
And then I make what my husband calls Idaho gumbo, because I don't use seafood and okra.
I'll pass on the okra. I tell the story about okra all the time, you know, about my mother and choices and options and allowing people space and bandwidth. Because every time I cook greens, she has to have okra with greens. Mm-hmm. I am 58 years old and I say, Mama, I'm making some greens. Oh, baby, you going to make the okra with it? I was like, yes. I make her plate. Are you going to have a little okra? I said, no, I've been telling you for years, I don't like okra. But what I have learned to do is to meet her where she is and still cook the okra for her, but not put it on my plate and not judge her because of what she's eating and saying, ooh, yep, that's nasty. If she enjoys it, I let her enjoy it. But what I ask her to do is stop asking me, do I want some? Because I don't want some.
Right.
So it's much like life.
It is life.
You feel like somebody's color, race, religion, hairdo, language, allow them to be in that space. Okay. Mm-hmm. Don't merge in their lane. Don't bother them. And allow them not to like what they don't like. You don't have to like it, but don't bother people. Don't bother people. And again, it resonates so much with what we're talking about. You know, and resilience and bouncing back, because if you have resilience and you can bounce back, you know, you don't have the problems, because in your mind, you don't have that neuro-linguistic programming of what is going to happen an hour from now. Like you said, you're going to stay right there in the moment because that's what's happening right now. That's what's happening right now. So girl, I'm telling you, that gumbo and, you know, these cars, we didn't even think it was going to go there, but it makes perfect sense. And that's what I like to do for my brains, is I like to make sense. I don't want to come with some big $25 word or some super, because I know some super smart, you know, psychologists that you need a thesaurus as you're talking to them at the same time. But I want people to hear your story. I want people to walk your walk with you because that's what makes sense. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing now moving forward and how to get in contact with you, Teresa. I mean, I can't wait for you to really start teaching. I'm not a nurse, so I probably can't join that course, but I'm really hoping that maybe you do a few more, you know, videos or do an online course, because this is just, my heart is just so warm right now. And I thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. I can't wait for people to hear what we're doing. We've started negotiations to talk about an app to host our information so that people can get a little taste of resilience. You know, I want them to be like 2 to 5 minute videos or audios, or even just little things to read on what the principles are, how they work, little stories about, you know, because sometimes the principles are a little bit elusive when you start saying, you know, your thought in the moment. But sometimes people think they know what that means. But when you put it into a story, people go, oh, that's what it is. Much like we've talked about today, you know, the story tells more than the words. It's that feeling that you were just talking about of when you hear something that's true, you know it by the way it feels. And so we're bringing that to nurses through a couple of avenues right now. We're trying to work with some institutions to bring it to the front line of COVID. Mm. Because I think our nurses on the front lines need something easily accessible in the moment. Even if it's just, you know, sometimes even one little quote or one little story can settle you down. Or just a reminder that says, you're just living in the feeling of your thinking. That's all that's happening, and it will pass. It's like the weather. It comes and it goes. It never stays the same. You can't hang on to the happy thought. And you can, you know, even when you try to hang on to something you want, it's hard to do. And you can drop the thoughts you don't want because we know they don't stay. So in that way, it becomes that fluidity of life, like the feelings and the emotions are fine. They're how you're feeling in the moment. It's the recognizing that it's yours, that that's how you feel about something, and it's okay. You know, and the one thing I think people could really do is to just not be afraid of the way they feel. We try to avoid.
Own it. They want to deny it. They want to put it off on other people. They want to shame other people. Or they are so combative, because you see that in the world right now, is that, okay, you know, either you are for me or you are against me. Mm-hmm. And it's not even about that. I'm just trying to, you know, figure out where I'm at in all of this. It's not about you, okay? And I tell people all the time, when it's your turn and it's about you, I'm your cheerleader. But when it's my turn and it's about me, cheer me on.
Yeah.
Well,
and just let it be. Don't worry about what other people think or do.
Right.
It's we just want to feel better. You know, everything that people do, even the terrible things that we see, people just want to feel better.
They want to win at any cost now.
Yeah. But there's always that part of us. I think, and I'm sure there's people out there who just wish ill harm to people, but that's their personal use of thought. I don't think that's the majority at all. I think the majority of people want to love each other. They want to embrace each other, to support each other. We have to have that as a society to survive. And we all want a good life.
You know, as a species, you look at the animal kingdom, and the only time that you really kind of see an upheaval is when they're breeding or they're feeding. Yeah. You know, but other than that, they are living in perfect harmony. They're not trying to take over anything. They're not trying, you know, you look at a pride of a women lion, you know, there's one stud and the women take care of everything.
Right. So, and they nurse each other's cubs and they help each other, you know, and I think in the nursing world, we are becoming more cohesive than we've ever been. We need each other. We have to be nice to each other. And we, you know, and I know lots of nurses who are doing that, lots of them, me included. I try to do the best that I can with with spreading a little cheer or some compassion or just acknowledging, you know, I see you're having a bad day. Can I help you?
Right.
You know, if you just acknowledge it, sometimes they'll say, no, you got your own to do it. Thanks for asking.
Right.
And something changes with you. It's like
that person decompresses. Yeah, that person decompresses. It's like, wow. You know, I tell people all the time, or I'll call, I get a customer service person on the phone. And I say, so how are you doing today? And they're going,
Yeah.
Because I stopped to ask them before I lied into them.
Yeah, right.
But I stopped to ask them, you know, how are you doing? Show that compassion. That is amazing. So tell my brains how to get in contact with you you know, the wonderful work that you're doing. I love it.
And if you'd like to contact us, two words, nursecoaching.com. So it's NURSE coaching, COACHING.com. And there's an info page there, and you can put in any comments or contact us or any way you want to contact us for any other reason besides the school, you can put it in that note and we'll give you a call back.
Well, I'm so glad that you were here and Lynn was here and the work that you're doing, because it's above and beyond. It's taking care of the people that take care of us. And if we don't, you know, if our nurses are overwhelmed, you can forget about whatever disease you have because there's nobody to take care of you.
Yeah, you know? We want to keep nurses nursing.
We do. And again, they're falling off because they can't take it. They are stressed out here on the edge. Brains, I want you to go and listen to some other edgy conversations. I have had great nurses, great doctors that are here. I just had a great doctor talking about what's going on in the ER room and addiction. We want you to be safe. We want you to take all the precautions that you need to get through this pandemic, but also to be able to get through and survive in life. And be sure that you wear a smile. Because if you don't, you're not fully dressed. Thank you so much, Teresa. You're a rock star.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye, brains.